For ages, Jews have been questioned about the prohibition that is written in the Torah, the prohibition about taking interest for a loan. It's because the Torah says that it is forbidden to take interest from your brethren, if your brother becomes poor, so you should lend him, but do not charge interest. However, the Gentile charge interest. The Rambam details this as follows. It's forbidden to take interest from a Jew, from a fellow Jew. From a Gentile, you may take interest, you may charge him interest. But an idol worshiper, it's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah asei lahashik la'akum. Now, one could ask, we can understand why it's allowed. You're allowed to charge interest on a loan. Although it's forbidden to cheat a Gentile, and even an idol worshiper is forbidden to cheat him, it's forbidden to steal from him. And nevertheless, it is permissible to charge interest on a loan. That's because, like the Gemara says, charging interest is something that both agree to. The lender wants to lend money and make a profit. The borrower needs the loan, so they agree. So when the borrower gives money to the lender, it's not unjust gain, it is something they both agree to. So we can understand why it's permissible to charge interest to a Gentile. But why is it a mitzvah? Where is the mitzvah part over here that you're allowed to, not only are you allowed to, but you have a mitzvah to charge interest to an idol worshiper? To explain this and to have an understanding, a deeper understanding of what is the actual meaning and the halach parameters of the interest payment and this mitzvah, this prohibition of charging interest to a fellow Jew, the Rebbe goes into a very deep Talmudic discussion in the 12th volume of Likutei Sichas, Bahar Beis. The Rebbe says to understand this, let's analyze in more detail this mitzvah, this halacha, this law, this prohibition of taking interest. And the Rebbe goes through a real Talmudic analysis, and you see the genius of Talmudic debate in this discussion. And in the footnotes, he brings from the earliest commentators in Talmud to much later generation, to the Achrayim, in understanding this. And it takes us to a debate, an argument, halachic argument, concerning if someone already made the interest payment. He made the interest payment, and now he knows he did something wrong. He made the interest payment from one Jew to another Jew. It's forbidden to do it from, it's forbidden for the lender, and it's forbidden for the borrower. So for example, it was a loan for $100,000. And the agreement was that the borrower will pay 10% interest, so he's going to pay $10,000. And he already made that payment. He returned the loan. He made the payment of $10,000. And now the lender feels guilty. He sinned. It's a Torah prohibition to charge interest, to take interest. So what does he do? So the law is that to make good on this, he has to return the forbidden gain. He has to give back the $10,000 to the lender. I'm sorry, he has to give back the $10,000 to the borrower. Now, what happens if the borrower says, you know something, I forgive it to you. Yes, you owe me $10,000. I shouldn't have given you the $10,000. You should have not taken and charged me $10,000. It's a mitzvah to lend to a fellow Jew without charging interest. And something that was sinful happened between us. So you have to pay it to me back. I forgive you this debt. Concerning this possibility of forgiving an interest payment that was already made, we have a debate, a halachic dispute between the Goyinim and the Rosh. The Goyim refers to the Torah leadership in Babylonia, in ancient Babylonia. And the era was post-Talmudic. It's from about the year 600 to about the year 1000. During that era, centuries of Torah scholarship, very little is written. But from what is written and also what was transmitted from generation to generation, we know many opinions in halacha. The Goyim said that even if the ribbis was paid, and now the borrower wants to forgive this debt, he wants to forgive the return of this payment, he can't forgive it. Even if he says, "I forgive this," it doesn't happen. The forgiveness doesn't happen. It is not in his hands to forgive this. And the words that are quoted in the name of the Goyim is, and the Rebbe brings us in this sikha, "Kol ribis sheba'olam mechila." Really, every charge of interest is something that they agree to. It's an agreed upon charge. Now, if forgiving the charge before they started, the borrower, he forgives the lender for charging him that. So forgiving the charge after it incurred is equal to forgiving the charge before it was incurred. So before the charge was incurred, the lender and the borrower agreed. The borrower says, "It's okay, I know I don't have to pay you, but I want to pay you. I want to give you this $10,000 interest charge." So it doesn't work. Similarly, after the charge was incurred and after the payment was made, it is not in the hands of the borrower to forgive it, just like it wasn't in his hands to agree to it and forgive it, forgive this cost in the beginning. The Rosh, Rabbi Asher, who lived in a much later time, about the 12th century, 13th century, his opinion is that you can forgive it. If the lender approaches the borrower and says, "I want to give you back the $10,000, I did wrong to you, I owe it to you," and the borrower says, "I forgive it," the lender doesn't have to pay it. And it is in the hands of the borrower to forgive it. So now we're going to analyze this in more in depth. What is the position, the logical argument, the logical position of the Goyim, and what's the logical position of the Rosh? Now, it would seem from first look that the Rosh's opinion makes sense. Look, who does he have to pay it back to? Who does the lender have to pay back this $10,000? To the borrower. So the borrower says, "You know, what do you have to give it to me? I'm going to give it back to you. I forgive it to you." So what's wrong with him doing that? It's a debt that now the lender owes to the borrower to give back the $10,000. If the borrower forgives it, what's wrong with it? Why doesn't it take hold? Why is it not a legal transaction? And it's not even his power to forgive it. Even if he says, "I forgive it," it's not forgiven. So from the early commentators in the Talmud called the Rishonim, there's a Ritva. It's a Ritva in Baba Metzia, where these laws are discussed. The whole chapter called Eizo Neshech, what is an interest payment, analyzing all these laws. And the Ritva, in his commentary, brings the opinion of the Goyim, and he says why it is actually, what is their position? Why it's not in the hands of the borrower to forgive it. He says that unlike theft or cheating someone in a business deal in money, overcharging, in those cases, it's illegal and unjust gain. The thief, he has something that actually belongs to the victim, to his victim. And therefore, he is obligated with a monetary obligation. He's the islay al chavrei shibud moment. There's a monetary obligation that he has to make good. He's holding someone else's money. But by interest, he's not holding technically someone else's money. It's that he has something that's unkosher. It's not a monetary obligation. It's not an obligation that he really owes, that the lender now owes to the borrower. He owes it to heaven. It's because the Torah forbid this to happen. It's something that's iser, it's like iser bola. It's like something that's unkosher. It's in the realm of laws between man and God, not between the laws that are between man and man. So therefore, the borrower wants to forgive it. The debt is not owed to the borrower. This debt is owed to Shamayim. It's owed to heaven. It's owed to God. It's because only the Torah forbid it. It's not because he has someone else's money. He doesn't have someone else's money technically, because the borrower agreed to give it to the lender. The lender is not holding some illegal gain. He's not holding something that is someone else's. So therefore, why is the Torah saying, give it back, return it? This is because Hashem wants him to do good. It's an obligation to heaven. It's Hachal HaShamayim U'Chayiv. So therefore, it's not in the hands of the borrower to forgive it. So in other words, this is different than theft or other illegal gain, where then it's a debt to his fellow man. Therefore, fellow man can forgive. The victim of a theft can say to the thief, I forgive you, keep the money. And there's no obligation for the thief to return the stolen goods. But over here, it's not between man and man. It's a mitzvah obligation. It's a chiyuv l'shamayim. Therefore, the Torah just said, give it to, drop this money. How do you return it? Don't return it to the Beis HaMikdash. Don't return it to the Kohanim. Give it to the person who you took the interest from. But it's a debt to heaven. Therefore, the borrower, it's not in his hands to forgive it. So let's now understand the other side of the coin. What's the opinion of the Rush? And that is really very important over here, because this argument of the Ritva explaining that interest charges are not the same as illegal gain, and that interest, because interest charges are not really a wrong that was made to another man, but it's a wrong that's made to heaven, it's a mitzvah wrong, really the halacha is that way, and everyone agrees it, and we can prove it. The Rebbe brings also from the Ritva why everyone has to agree that in essence the return of the money, the obligation that is on the lender to return that money, that in essence it is a mitzvah obligation and not a monetary obligation. Why do you have to say that? Because everyone agrees that if a lender dies after collecting interest, so for example in our case, he collected $10,000, 10% charge on a $100,000 loan, and he was thinking of paying it back, or not necessarily thinking of paying it back, but we know that was this unkosher gain of this interest that the lender received, and then he died before he could return the $10,000. So the halacha is that the children, the successors who inherited the estate of this lender, they don't have to give the $10,000 back to the borrower. Now, if it would be a case of theft or other illegal gain, the children would have to pay that back. If someone, a thief, died and he has an estate, so his successors, his children, have to pay whatever their father stole, all the debts that he incurred, because it's a monetary obligation, not only on the person, but only on his property. So the children now take the property of their father, his estate, to pay all his debt and all the damages that he may have caused other people, or if he stole from other people and so on. But since this is a mitzvah obligation, it's a mitzvah obligation for the father to return the $10,000 interest charge. When he passes away, that mitzvah is not transferred to the children. You don't inherit mitzvahs. You inherit money, but you don't inherit mitzvahs. Mitzvahs, each person has their own accounts. The father died, he didn't do the mitzvah. He'll have to take that up with his maker. The children don't have an obligation. It's only monetary obligations that are an obligation on the person and his assets and his estate. That's when the children have to make good. So here we see that everyone agrees that in essence, the return of that interest charge is a mitzvah obligation. It's because the Torah said that he has to pay back. Notwithstanding that the lender agreed and willingly gave that interest payment to the borrower. If so, it makes a lot of sense, the opinion of the Goyim. How will the Rush, Usher, explain this? How can he explain that it is in the hands of the borrower to forgive it, if in essence, the Torah obligates the lender to make good on this because of his relationship with Hashem, not because of his relationship to the borrower? So what's the logic of the borrower being in the position to forgive it? So the Rebbe explains this by saying that, well, the opinion of Rabbeinu Asher is that the nature of this religious obligation, the nature of this mitzvah is that the Torah said, how do you make good to Hashem for charging interest? That if you have to make good with the borrower. So since the Torah put it an obligation and a payment to the borrower, so it's really in the borrower's hands to forgive it. In other words, the Rebbe says, the debate between the Goyim and the Rosh is concerning this mitzvah of returning the interest payment. Is it an obligation? The payment itself is not a payment to the borrower. It's a payment to heaven. If it's a payment purely to heaven, the payment itself is only a mitzvah payment. So then you can't forgive it. That's why the Goyim say you can't forgive it. They hold that not only is it the Torah obligation, not only is it a religious obligation, not only is it a mitzvah obligation, but the payment is a debt, an obligation only to heaven. It's not in the hands of the borrower to forgive. The Rosh says that in essence, it's a mitzvah that Hashem put on the lender to pay. But the nature of the mitzvah is to pay it to the borrower, and therefore, if the borrower agrees to forgive it, it does take hold. Now, what is the common denominator between the Goyim and the Rosh? The common denominator between them is that in essence, the charging of interest and the return of an interest payment, that obligation that's on the lender, that in essence, this is not between man and man, it's between man and God. Now, why is that? Because really, if you look at normal monetary relations, money issues between people, if two people agree with making a deal, and like the Gemara says, kol tnai shebamamin is allowed. People can make any conditions as far as their money is concerned, as long as they agree to it. So, nevertheless, over here, the Torah forbid this type of agreement. Why? Because really, when the borrower pays the lender that money, he agreed to pay it, he gave it to him, and it was for a charge of a usage of money. So therefore, really, in the words of the Rebbe, the money of this interest payment, mamoine shel malva, this is the money of the lender. It's his money. He brings interesting debate from many commentators, from the Ritva and Kiddushin, Machne Ephraim, Avnei Nezer, Shar HaMelech, Avnei Meluyin, Rebbe Kiva Ege, Pnei Yeshua, the list of the greatest Talmudic scholars spanning centuries from early medieval times through the 1800s who debated this, and then the Rebbe, of course, in our times. How proving this idea that really once the lender received the interest money that was given to him willingly for a charge that made sense in monetary relations, a charge of interest, so therefore this money is really in essence the money of the lender. Nevertheless, the Torah forbid it. The question is, when he pays it back to the lender, I'm sorry, when the lender pays it back to the borrower, if it's in the hands of the borrower to forgive it or not. But in essence, this belongs within the category of laws between man and God, not so much in the laws between man and man. And in fact, although he doesn't mention this in the Sicha, it is interesting to note that the laws of interest payment in the Shulchan Aruch and in the Torah, the Code of Jewish Law, they're included in the same section that deals with the laws of kashrus. It's not in the section that deals with monetary matters. In the Gemara, it actually is in the section of Talmud that deals with other monetary matters. Similarly, the Rambam has this in the laws of loans about monetary matters. But it's interesting that in the Torah, the Shulchan Aruch, the later code, it is together with the laws of kashrus. According to what the Rebbe is explaining over here, it makes a lot of sense, because the way the Ritva and certainly the Rosh have to agree, as we explained before, this is really between man and God, not between man and man. Now, to explain this a little better, I was thinking, if you're talking about, is it morally wrong to charge interest on a loan, why don't we compare it to charging rent for an apartment? So we're saying when it comes to loan, someone is lending his fellow $100,000, charges 10%, $10,000. Let's use an example, 12%. You soon see why. So he gives him $12,000. In the end, the lender gets back his $100,000 plus $12,000. Terrible sin. It is considered a grave sin in the Gemara and in the Shulchan Aruch. Now, what happens if someone has an apartment worth $100,000 and he offers that apartment for rent to another person? So the person is in that apartment that's worth $100,000. He's using the apartment and he's paying $1,000 a month. And after a year, he leaves the apartment. So what's going to happen at the end of this year? The landlord gets back an apartment that's worth $100,000. And for allowing the tenant to use the apartment, he also gains another $12,000. That's okay. So an apartment, I can charge money for using my apartment. So how come my money, I can't charge for using my money? If I have a car, I can rent to you my car. You have to pay a rental fee. At the end of the period of the rental, you're giving me back my car. Plus, I can charge you for it. I can charge you for the use of my car. I can charge you for the use of my apartment. Why can't I charge you for the use of my money? It may even be more risk in lending you my money, allowing you to use my money, than allowing you to use my car or my apartment. So this, I think, explains a little, and in a way, a more applicable way, this whole idea. What the Rebbe is saying here in the name of the Ritva, that really this whole prohibition against charging interest to a fellow is not, is because Hashem gave a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah. The nature of the mitzvah is because of a brotherhood. Since it's here, l'achicha, like it says in the pasuk in the beginning, in Parshas Bahar, ki yamuch achicha, your brother became poor, and he's alone. Don't charge him interest. It's part of Jewish brotherhood. Because if otherwise, it's not included in the concept of illegal gain, because there's no illegal gain. A person is entitled to charge for the use of his money, and a use that someone else chose to benefit from and agreed to pay for it. So therefore, this is only a mitzvah obligation, or what we can call a religious obligation. Now, the Rebbe takes this a step further, and he points out that although there's a mitzvah or an obligation for the lender to return this unkosher gain, this $10,000, to give it back to the borrower, and although the halacha is that the borrower can forgive it, but he doesn't have to forgive it, and the lender would have to give it back to the borrower, nevertheless, the halachic authorities say that midas chasidus, that if you want to choose the more noble route to be, to do, so to say, spiritually the right thing, the borrower shouldn't take back that $10,000. The Rebbe says there's an explanation for that if you look at the chasidus and the Kabbalah of money. What's money? Money, according to Chassidus and Kabbalah, is not just something you could use to get your way. Kabbalah, the Rebbe quotes, Nitzutzin Kudoshim. Money are holy sparks. And everybody, when they're in this world, has their mission, life mission is to use everything that is around him and elevate it to holiness through living a Torah lifestyle. So by living the Jewish life and living a Torah lifestyle, so whether what he eats, what he sleeps, his house, his vacation, if it's all part of his life experience, not only the mitzvahs that he does, but living, he's living the Jewish life, he has a mission, it's a holy mission that Hashem put him in this world. And all the money he makes, he is collecting sparks that are connected to his neshama. Yitzutzin kedoshim hashayochim l'shoresh neshmasei. It is the holy sparks that are connected to his soul. And everyone comes to this world, the money they're going to make, the object that they're going to use, their sphere of influence are connected to them, not only in the secular sense, not only in a mitzvah sense, but in the Kabbalah Hasidic sense, he's collecting the holy sparks that are going to come into his neshama, because they're connected to his neshama, and then his neshama and the mission of his life will be fulfillment. How? Collecting the sparks that are connected to him. So the Rebbe says, that's the inner meaning, the inner purpose of why it's better for the borrower to forgive, to choose the Hasidic way, Midas Hasidus, the more noble way, to allow the lender to keep that. And that's because, as we said before, the money earned by interest, as far as monetary and moral, secular way of looking at it, it's Mamoine Shel Malva. Even halachically, it's Mamoine Shel Malva, is the money of the lender. That's why when the lender dies, that money remains in his estate, because he earned that money, it's his money. It was only a mitzvah for him to undo the sin that he did between him and God. That's why he has to return it. But the money is his, and when he dies, there's no longer a mitzvah to return it, so that is part of his estate, because it's his. So therefore, it is more noble for the borrower to forgive it, because to allow those sparks to remain in the hands of the lender. Because if you look at how this money was generated by his funds, and it's not an unjust gain, that shows that there's a way to see these sparks as belonging to the lender, so forgive it, so it should stay there, even though halachically you're not obligated to do that. And then, of course, it would be a different scenario. And based on all this, the Rebbe comes to the conclusion to really understand in a deeper way why it's a mitzvah to charge interest from a Gentile, from an idol worshiper. And that's because, as we said before, the mission, our mission, is to utilize everything around us for the service of Hashem. And all of our needs, and the money we earn, and whatever we do, is part of our life's mission, and we have an obligation to do it, l'shem shamayim, to serve Hashem, and to live, so to say, the Torah life. And by doing that, we elevate everything, and all the sparks that are connected with us. And something very important happens during our lifetime. By living our life, doing what's right, and we are collecting those sparks, elevating the world. And Tanya says through that, we're preparing the world for Mashiach. And also the sparks that are connected to his soul are now bringing fulfillment and purpose and spirituality, additional spiritual to his soul. So now he has a business relationship with this Gentile, with this idol worship. And this business relationship, he could lend them money without gaining anything from it. Well, that may be a nice thing to do. But if he charges interest and the Gentile agrees to pay the interest, he is taking the holy sparks that were outside the realm of holiness, outside of the possibility of being elevated by a Torah lifestyle, and leaving it in Sitra Achra, leaving it on the other side. So therefore, that's why it's a mitzvah to charge interest, because you have a moral and kosher opportunity of elevating sparks that were previously outside of the realm of Kedusha, of holiness, and bringing it and using it for living the Torah lifestyle. So therefore it's a mitzvah to gather those sparks and elevate it. And that is the significance of charging interest. It's nothing immoral, it's something agreed to, it's something that, as far as business morality, is just. It's just between another Jew. It's wrong because of a mitzvah obligation. Outside of that brotherhood, it's a mitzvah to elevate the sparks that we can and bring them into holiness.